Welcome back to the latest episode of Across the Bifrost, and we're back in our prime form doing box reviews. Across the pond, I have my dear co-host Pat Dunn for joining me today. Well, we're going to talk about more X-Men. But first, Pat, how you doing?
Doing great, TT. Very happy to be here. Very happy to be reviewing more of this X-Men release wave. We're in box 2 out of 3. Plenty to talk about.
Yeah, so before I jump into that, Pat, I was curious. You guys have zoos over there in England, right?
We do.
Do you have just like random American animals in there? Like, do you have like white-tailed deer or like bald eagles or like, you know, prairie dogs or like gophers or anything?
Like animals that are native to the US? Sure. I mean, zoos in the UK have animals from all around the world. Some of them are from the US. They're from lots of places.
Like when you think of US animals, what do you think of?
Definitely the American bald eagle, the buffalo.
Buffalo? You've got, do you have buffalo in zoos over there?
Well, no, I mean, I don't think so. I can't remember ever having seen a buffalo in a zoo. Oh.
What's the most American animal you've seen in a zoo?
The most American animal? It's got to be the eagle, right?
Have you seen an eagle in a zoo?
I suppose other like quintessentially American animals are things like cows and horses, and they don't really belong in zoos.
Why are cows American?
I mean, you guys have cowboys, right? You heard a lot of cows.
Oh, okay. What about raccoons? Do you have raccoons over there?
In zoos? Yeah, but they're probably the kind of thing that kicks about in a zoo. I mean, I've not been to a zoo for a while, and I don't remember seeing a raccoon.
You don't have native raccoons?
No. No, we don't. They're North American, I think.
Okay, so you might have a raccoon in a zoo. Yeah. That would be a good exhibit. I could go. I'd go to a raccoon exhibit.
Yeah, well, cool. I mean, we often have, like, nocturnal animal exhibit that have raccoons and various little furry animals.
Maybe a possum?
Sure, possum definitely would be in a zoo. I've seen a possum in a zoo.
All right. Anyway, sorry about that. First, we got Sleeper to hear it. Pat, what are we talking about?
Hold on. Wait. Why are you asking me about zoos? What's put this on?
Well, I was just curious. I just wanted your perspective on it because, I can't think of a British animal we have in the zoos. I'm not going to die a lie. Like, what is the quintessential British animal?
I mean, there aren't many, right? Most of the bigger British animals got made extinct hundreds of years ago, right? Like, used to have bears, for example, not anymore.
Well, yeah, and like you had some weird like super moose, right?
Yeah, and that's all gone.
Oh, a badger? I think a badger is what I think of the UK.
Badger, sure. Fox, yeah. Hedgehog.
You guys have a viper or something, don't you? Isn't that what the old like snake pit mythology came from?
I don't know about that. Maybe we have grass snakes or something, but they're pretty rare. Mm. Nothing venomous.
Really? I thought you had vipers.
No, we have no venomous snakes.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
All right.
Happy for you to prove me wrong. But yeah, certainly we don't have a lot of amazing wildlife in the UK.
So, but you've heard all the old rumors about like, back in Britain days, they dug snake pits and they threw people in there and they died to the snake pits.
No, I've literally never heard of that before. Seriously. It's news to me, TT.
That's definitely some king through. All right, I'll double check my mythology / lore and get back to you on that. Anyway, all right, are we ready to talk about To Me, My X-Men, Pat?
Yeah, we are. So this is our Sleeve It or Heave It contribution for the week, To Me, My X-Men. This is the X-Men affiliated tactics card. A X-Men character who has a leadership ability can play the card, doesn't have to be in their activation. They spend power, and for each power they spend, one other model can advance short toward them. What do you think of this card, TT?
Yeah, it's just worse Avengers Assemble, right?
Yes, but also no, right? It's worse in that it costs the same amount of power to move affiliated models short, but you have a range restriction. The reason why it's not strictly worse is the model moving isn't the same one as spending the power.
Oh, that's fair. Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. And that gives it a unique role to play at X-Men teams, right? Because the number one way that I see X-Men players use this card is they use it in round one to steal centerline extracts. Good old X-Men, the gimmick they love, stealing centerline extracts. They've got 101 ways to do it. And this is one of them, right? One of the more popular choices. Yeah. Two ways you can use this to steal centerline extracts. The face value way is you double advance your model to the middle of the centerline, you pick up the extract, and then your leader plays To Me, My X-Men, and you advance backwards. The second big brain play is you deploy your model on an extreme flank. You first play to me, my X-Men, advancing toward the leader, but at a but at an angle, so you're also advancing up the table. Mm-hmm. Then you make a single move to the center midline, pick up the extract, and then you can make a single move back. So that will get you further away with most characters, right? Anyone that has a medium move or longer.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good card. I mean, especially nowadays, like, remember the good old days when we had unaffiliated movement cards, Pat? I mean, those days are long gone, so any way you can get movements, I think, is really important.
Yeah. One thing I'd say about this card is you don't often see it played late game as just a value movement card, because I think at that point, the restriction about moving towards a leader becomes a little more problematic, especially because all of the X-Men leaders are kind of backline models who often aren't the kind of mobile character that can end with their positioning in mind to pull the team forwards or to give you really good flexibility with how you use this card.
Yeah, that's fair. I think you're right. I honestly, it's been so long since I played X-Men. It is just an early shenanigans card. But yeah, it's a good card, right? We're definitely sleeving this.
Yeah, we sleeve this, we do early shenanigans. Early shenanigans are great, right? If this card gives you a central steal, that's often worth a card, and then it has a little bit of extra value on top. Worth noting, of course, that you get slightly more mileage out of this card if you play multiple leaders, because they don't have to have an active leadership. They can be any X-Men leader.
That's a great shout out, and that's one of the reasons we wanted to cover today with Professor X, right, Pat?
Of course, TT. Let's go through Professor X's card.
Well, should we start with Shadow King?
No.
No? Okay.
Let's start with the main event.
We'll keep the segue alive. That's fine. Go ahead.
Yeah, cool. So, Professor X, Charles Xavier. Defensive stat line, 2 physical, 2 energy, 6 mystic, with 6 stamina on the front and 5 on the back, so 11 total. 4 threat character, size 2, medium mover on a medium base. He's got 3 different attacks, all mystic. His builder is Psychic Dart, range 4, 5 dice with Wild Root. Then he has Mental Suggestion, range 3, 6 dice, 1 cost. After the attack is resolved, if it dealt damage, you can advance the target character their speed. And Astral Jewel, range 3, 4 dice, 3 cost. You add dice to the attack roll equal to the target's mystic defense. And the target character can't reroll or modify dice in their defense roll. Where are you at with this, TT?
I don't really like Astral Duel that much, but I like Mental Suggestion quite a bit, and I like Psychic Dart, so all in all, I'm for it. I'm also confused why he's so fast, but that's a conversation for another day.
No, it's not. This is a box of UTT. We need to address the elephant in the room. Why is Professor X so fast? It's frankly ridiculous.
Well, he's very aerodynamic.
Yeah. Yes. For those who can't see TT on video right now, he just... stroked his bald head.
And then Pat stroked his.
Yeah. I mean, obviously that helps, right? And his chair is pretty aerodynamic. But this for me is really strange. I think AMG are very good at bringing the right set of rules to show a character in the way that you perceive them. And from the comics, from the TV shows, from the movies, Professor X was never a character that I thought of as being fast. Right, he's not the most mobile. He's usually the guy who comes in at the end at a slow walking speed and then monologues or solves the problem.
Yeah, I am shocked that he's got the zoomies like this. We haven't gone over his superpowers yet. I guess as a spoiler, he can't place himself. Like, I was assuming he would like be real pokey and then like place himself, but nope, he just zooms around.
It's faster than Magneto.
Yeah, he's just wheels for days.
Yeah. Yeah, keeps up with Beast. Anyway, I think his attacks are good. Psychic Dart is a good builder. I love Wild Root. Root is a very powerful condition that is not very common in the game. So to me, that's pretty exciting on his builder. And Mental Suggestion, I think, is excellent. This is the same attack as Cassandra Nova. The difference being you have to do damage to get the effect. But also, this is on a 4 threat model instead of a 5 threat model. I agree with you, though. Astral Jewel is pretty lackluster until you get to fight very powerful wizards or other psychics, right?
Yeah, honestly, I mean, I feel like if you're fighting very powerful wizards, that's a whole other conversation. But yeah, I think the attacks are fine. I think we're most excited about his mini builder and his mini spender and his builder. And then occasionally duel will be fine.
Yeah, like if Professor X has to beat up Professor X, you're not going to be sad about a 10 dice astral duel, right?
I'd rather mental suggested him because I'd move Professor X so far away.
That's true. That's true. I mean, Professor X obviously counters himself pretty well.
Yeah.
All right. His other superpowers.
Okay.
We've got Professor's Guidance. This is a Shuri reroll bubble. While another ally character within range 4 is attacking or defending during the modified dice step, you can spend up to 3 power. For each power spent, you can reroll a dice. Important to note, this superpower can be used only once per turn. Telepathic Lock. When an enemy character targets this character with an attack, it uses its Mystic Defense unless the attacker pays 2 power. So we've seen this effect on models like Enchantress. And Omega Level Telepath. This character can't be pushed or advanced by the effects of Mystic Attacks or enemy superpowers. There you go, TT, ruining your mental suggestion plan.
Damn it.
Aside from that, how do you feel about this set of powers?
He's good, right? I mean, Professor's Guidance makes sense from that fluff standpoint of like him helping everyone else out, kind of getting them where they need to be. Telepathic Lock will help him not explode immediately. So that's beneficial.
Yes. I mean, he would be trivially easy to kill if it wasn't for Telepathic Lock. But we've seen this kind of effect on multiple characters, right? Enchantress, Ebony Maw, Mysterio. And we know that it helps you survive a little bit, especially earlier in the game, when models don't have a lot of power kicking around. But it is no consolation at all if the opposing character has a bunch of power and murder on their mind, right? If they just want to invest their power to take you off the table, then Professor X is very easy to kill.
Yep.
I think, though, before we assess the character as a whole, we need to talk about his leadership, right? Because this leadership is very important piece of his kit. Xavier's School for Gifted Youngsters, affiliation Uncanny X-Men. Once per turn, when an allied character spends 1 or more power to use an active or reactive superpower, after the effect is resolved, another allied character may gain a power.
Okay, I like that. I mean, obviously, whenever we're handing out power, it's phenomenal. There's no range restriction on it.
Nope.
I obviously think this is really good.
Yeah, I think this is a stunning leadership.
So I would like to step back for a minute. And I know you segued us here. How do you rate Xavier without the leadership?
I think any time a model has the support ability where you get a bubble to reroll dice, I see that as defining their role. And there's a bunch of those models in the game, right? And they're all a similar archetype of models that stand back in the middle of your team, do ranged attacks, and do rerolls. You've got like Shuri, Invincible Iron Man, Arnim Zola, and now Professor X, right? I'm like Sentinel Prime, maybe as close to that. Like, there's a bunch of them. Mm-hmm. And I see Professor X as like worthy of joining that pantheon of models. And some of those models see a lot of play and others don't.
Well, he's also just the premium version of that, right? Is this on another fourth threat that I'm forgetting?
Yeah, Invincible Iron Man, who's probably the
I'm sorry.
Right, also a leader in the new core set. Yep. Invincible Iron Man, much tougher with push on his builder, but doesn't have mental suggestion, which is very, very cool. I would say I would probably rate Invincible Iron Man over Professor X.
Yeah, I mean, Jarvis also can be used multiple times, can't it?
It can, but Jarvis. So all of these rules, all of these characters have slightly different rules for their reroll bubble, which is both confusing and annoying.
Oh, Jarvis is only attacking.
Yeah,
right?
Jarvis is only attacks. Professor X is once per turn. Shuri has the best version where it's not once per turn and it's attack and defense. None of them can affect themselves. I believe Arnim Zola might be able to affect himself, but his one gives bleed and so on and so forth. Don't ask me to remember what Sentinel Prime one does. It's probably the same as Shuri's.
You are correct on Zola.
Yeah. So they all have slightly different rules. But this is a good one. Once per turn is a limitation, right? You can't pump like 9 power from Professor X into 3 attacks on a single activation. But it's not a huge handicap because you can still spend 3 of Professor X's power in every activation and he's not going to have an infinite amount of power.
That's the other thing. I mean, he has pretty mediocre power generation, right?
Yeah, I think
mediocre might be the wrong word, but he...
No, he does. His power generation is he's got a range 4/5 dice builder, right?
Yeah.
That's his power generation. It's not very good. But I think, of course, the important point is his leadership. His leadership conserves power and is effectively generating it for you over the course of a game. And it has fantastic synergy with Professor's Guidance because you can spend a power with Professor's Guidance if you've got nothing else to do that turn to use the leadership and you get the power back on a different character. And presumably at some point, there's other characters are going to be spending their power on superpowers and they can feed it back to Professor X. And you can conserve power very effectively.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing you kind of talked around is, right, him being able to use Professor's Guidance on your opponent's turn, right? So we can kind of double dip on the amount of power that we're passing around
here. Yeah, you can use this on every turn except for Professor X himself.
Yep.
So you can use this very frequently to trigger the leadership. Plus, of course, you can use other superpowers from other characters if you don't want to be using this one.
Yeah, so and the reason I want to talk about it is, like, without the leadership, he is an unexciting character to me.
Yes, I agree.
He's just you know how hard I am on general four threats. He's just like an underwhelming four threat. With the leadership, I think he's a really interesting, compelling, and dynamic choice. And I think that just goes to show how powerful you and I rate this leadership.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think he is a below average four threat. He has not great action economy, limited control, poor survivability. His reroll bubble is good.
Yeah, it's fine, right?
Yeah, but I think his own synergy with his leadership plus the general good stuff nature of the leadership makes me really excited to run him.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so leadership amazing. Professor X is fine. Do we want to dive more into this now? Do we want to save that for an ACS?
Well, I think there's a couple of points to note. I think one is this is our third X-Men leader. So there's a lot of competition.
Well, Storm and Cyclops, right?
Yeah, this is our third. There's a lot of competition. Yeah. All three of them are ranged attackers that want to hang back, which is a little bit awkward. Mm-hmm. And Cyclops also has a leadership that gives you power. So Professor X is good, but he's not doing a lot of stuff that is very unique.
I think the amount of power he gives out compared to Cyclops is very different, right? Cyclops is contingent on dealing damage, I want to say, isn't it?
Yeah, so Cyclops is rewarding you for making attacks, and Professor X is rewarding you for superpowers. And you're right, different characters will like one leadership more than the other. But I just want to call out, holistically, you know, from an affiliation point of view, we've already got a long-range leader that gives you more power. And I personally prefer Professor X to Cyclops, and I prefer his leadership, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's better.
Okay, sure. I think he's better, but I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. Cool. So, you want to move on to Shadow King? I know you're excited for Shadow King.
I think we should move on to Shadow King. And again, like I don't think either of us are trying to dog on Xavier. We both think the leadership is very good. We think he's fine as a character. We think he's fine without the leadership. I think he's better than average as a total package.
Yeah, I think so. One thing I want to call out about Xavier is he's pretty easy to kill, and he's not very good at spending power himself.
No, he's actually miserable at it.
Yeah, because he can't guide himself, and then his two options to spend power are his 1-cost spender and his 3-cost spender, which against most targets is not a very efficient attack. So he is a model who can get beaten up and then can leave you in a tough spot where he can't often extract himself from danger. He can't get up and punish the person that dazed him. Right, I think he's
also really bad at triggering his own leadership on his turn.
Yeah, I mean, but look at his whole kit, right? With Professor's Guidance and his leadership, he is not an independent model, right? He is
no, not at all.
He's a support model that is part of a team, and I think you need to play him with that in mind. And you need to be—he needs to be supporting the right models, and he himself needs to be supported. I think to get the most out of him.
Yep, I agree. I think he's going to be one of those models where you can have extremely horrible games if you use or deploy him wrongly, right? And there's other games where he's going to feel amazing.
Yeah. And to his credit, his bizarre medium move helps him a little bit in those situations, right? Where if he just has to run away or you have to fix a mistake you've made, he's a bit more forgiving than if he was a short mover.
Yeah. And the medium base helps with the bubble right up until he explodes or gets something thrown at him.
Yeah. So overall, I like him. But yeah, let's go to Shadow King.
Yeah. He really hates things being thrown at him.
Oh my gosh, yeah, we didn't talk about that. He really hates that. Yeah. Okay.
Because his defensive tech doesn't help him against throws. It's just
no, nothing helps him against throws. He's just got not that many hit points and two physical defense.
Yep. All right, Shadow King. Shadow King is a 3/4/5. He has 6 stamina as healthy side, 6 stamina as inside. He's a 5 threat, size 3, and a short mover. He has Mental Shackle, a range 3, 6 dice, a mystic attack. Power equal damage done, Wild Root again. And after this is resolved, if it dealt damage, you may advance the target character short. His Astral Disintegration, cost 4, range 2, 5 dice mystic. Add dice equal to the amount of power the target character has to a maximum of 5. The target character cannot reroll or modify dice during the attack. So, Pat, what do we think of the top half of the Shadow King?
So I think some of the mirroring here with Professor X is interesting, right? Both models having builders with root, both having spenders that you can't modify that scale up their damage. In any case, to me, Shadow King is a strange model. He has some things about him I really, really like, and other things about him I think are just really below rate for his high 5-threat price tag.
Okay.
Things that I like. Mental Shackle. Oh, wow, this is a fantastic builder, right? This is a 6-dice mystic with Wild Root that can also move targets. That is phenomenal. What a good attack.
The ceiling on it is phenomenal.
Yeah. This is a wonderful attack. And I think you want to be making it as much as you can. Problem is, it's only range 3, and this guy is a short mover on a 50mm base. And then the other problem I have is his defenses are garbage. Right? He's got 3 physical defense with no way to improve it and his superpowers. Physical is by far and away the most common attack type, right? Both because physical is the most common and because of the fact it double dips as a dodge defense as well. And he's just got 12 stamina. Like, his defenses would be bad for a 4-threat character. He's probably the most fragile 5-threat in the game. I mean, I think he's just, like, worse than Jean Grey, worse than Cassandra Nova, and that is really saying something because those models are fragile.
Yeah, I'm not saying you're wrong. I know I made a weird face. I'd have to think about it. I just wasn't expecting.
Yeah, don't worry. We don't need to rank him on the how fragile is my 5-threat tier list.
Let's finish the card. I mean, so spoilers. But there's no defensive tech on the rest of his card. Well, yeah.
So he's really slow. He's got bad defenses, but his attack is incredible. That's my take from what you've read so far.
Okay. It's not. Okay, that's fine. Is Astral Fiend. 3 cost active superpower. Place a projection token within range 3 of this character. It's an action. I think I said that. When measuring range for this character's attacks or superpowers, measures from the projection token. When measuring range for enemy mystic attacks, enemy characters may measure to this projection token. When this character is dealt damage by an enemy mystic attack, remove the token. At the beginning of the cleanup phase, remove the token. The superpower can only be used once per turn. He has Immortal Essence, 3 cost superpower, active power, doesn't cost an action. He removes 3 from himself. He basically heals. He can only use that once per turn. He has Nightmare Visions, 4 cost reactive. When a character ends in advance within 3 of this character may use his superpower. Roll 3 dice. For each good things you roll, the enemy suffers 1 damage. If this superpower did at least 1 damage, this character being Shadow King, may advance the enemy character short. This superpower can only be used once per turn. And then he gets 1 additional power during the power phase. So he has a lot of different ways to spend power. Do we like any of them?
I like them. They are expensive, right?
Super expensive.
This guy's got a 4 cost spender, 2 3 cost superpowers, and a 4 cost superpower.
Yep.
Now, his builder is 6 dice, and he generates 1 additional power a turn. But, ooh, his power economy is real tight.
Well, and you mentioned it before, his action economy is also horrible.
His action economy is a disaster, which leads to his power economy being worse.
Right. So like Astral Fiend can kind of help with his action economy, but somehow you need to kickstart that into gear.
Astral Fiend doesn't help with his action economy because it costs an action.
Oh, that's true. You're right.
It just what Astral Fiend is doing,
it's like a really weird move effect.
It's like hit and run in reverse. You Astral Fiend forwards, make an attack, but your model stays where it is. It's as if you had advanced attack to move backwards. And I think what it is doing is helping to offset the fact this model is slow and fragile. Because you just want him to be as far away as possible using Astral Fiend and making a single builder. The problem is Astral Fiend costs 3 power. So maybe that's all you can do. Sometimes you can't even do that.
Yeah, I forgot it takes an action.
I mean, if it didn't cost an action, it would be busted. Because he would be able to project threat onto basically anywhere on the table.
I'd be fine with that. But anyway.
So
yeah, I mean, I don't know. His kit's just weird. All right, so Immortal Essence, I think, is just generally weird. 3 to heal 3 is fine. He only has 6 stamina.
Yeah.
I don't know how often you're going to get to use this.
Like, we've seen this before on models like Claw and Groot. We know it's good, but it's worth mentioning the more fragile your character is, the worse it is for them to heal during their activation because you need to survive until your activation to heal the damage. And this guy is the most fragile model that can heal himself in this way.
Yeah, and then his reactive superpower is...
it's really good.
Random?
But really random and really expensive. Yeah. So Nightmare Visions, the closest equivalent we've seen is on like things like Tricks and Traps on Mysterio, Psychic Distraction on Cassandra Nova, mm-hmm. where those attacks roll 4 dice instead of 3 to do the damage. But very importantly, if they damage, then the Mysterio or Cassandra get to move. In this case with Nightmare Visions, Shadow King is moving the model that advanced. And presumably, because this is triggered only from an advance, right? Presumably, there'll be a lot of times where if your model has advanced into range of Shadow King to trigger this, him then moving your model again is going to lead to a wasted activation. Right? Because you needed to move to get in range, and now you've moved presumably back closer to where you started. So I think when this triggers, it can be really backbreaking. I think it's very, very good against characters with charge. It's very good at complementing models with stealth. Notably, Shadow King doesn't have that, unlike Mysterio and Cassandra Nova. I think the upside to this effect is just sensational. But of course, you have to have 4 power to threaten it, and it's not that likely to succeed. I don't know, it's like 60% or something on 3 dice? 50% coin toss territory?
Higher than that. Because you have a 50% chance for every die you roll, right? To get one good thing.
No, it's only...
oh, no, I'm sorry. It's only crit wild, right?
Only so crit wild.
You have so a 25%.
25% chance 3 times.
Yeah. Yeah, could be better.
Yeah. So, so that's 4. My kind of point of view on Nightmare Visions. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I don't like it. It's too expensive to be that swingy for me. Like, if I spend 4 power, I want something to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it is incredibly expensive. I agree. But I also think this is the kind of effect that if it only costs 2 power, would be really oppressive. Because the threat, as the opponent playing against this guy, the threat of if I move my model to where it needs to be, then I can just get damaged and move away, and my whole round is wasted. Like, that's a disaster, right?
So... I'm not disagreeing with you. How many times a game do you think you'll trigger Nightmare Visions?
Well, I think you hope to trigger it as much as possible.
How many times do you think you'll trigger it?
Probably on average, like once would be my guess.
I was thinking 1.5 over the course of a game.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And then...
like, you might trigger it twice in a game and once it won't work. Be that kind of...
I just don't think he's a very good character.
He's definitely strange. He's got very unique, very powerful abilities in Astral Fiend and Nightmare Visions.
Yeah, but they
also are clearly they've got things on them that limit them, right? Like action on Astral Fiend definitely keeps it under control. 3 dice on Nightmare Visions for 4 power certainly makes it less appealing than equivalents.
I mean, his only affiliation tag is Brotherhood.
Yeah.
Like, can you see him fitting into a Brotherhood roster?
I mean, he's competing directly with Juggernaut. Very different character. Competing with Scarlet Witch. Like, I don't know. He doesn't seem to have particular synergy with the Brotherhood leaders. I suppose the thing that I like about him in Brotherhood is being able to move him with Asteroid M and then get good double attack activations with Mental Shackles.
Yeah, we can say that about so many of the Brotherhood characters. But
yeah, but a slow, high-threat character with a short range is one of the better options, right? He's like still competing with Magneto, but...
Yeah, the other end of the spectrum for squishiness, like I just drop him in there and hope he lives.
Yeah, I mean, Magneto is maybe not the toughest around, but he's tough enough, right? Especially if you're investing tactics cards in his survival. I like Shadow King because I think he is interesting and weird. I also find the model really cool with the like Shadow Demon, and I love the fact he's wearing a fez and looking incredibly smug in his art. Like, I like this guy. Do I think this guy is good? I think I'm siding with UTT. I'm not optimistic about him.
Yeah, I don't think he's a... As far as like effectiveness on the table, that's my main concern. If you like him because of the fez, that's respectable. I like fezes.
Yeah. This is the kind of model that isn't obviously good, but I will be really excited when I see someone play him at an event and they do well.
That's very fair. Someone else can figure this model out. Good for them.
Do you see... I mean, we mentioned he's only in Brotherhood. Do you see any particular synergies for him in other rosters?
I mean, okay, what does he want to do?
He wants to mental shackle people, generate power, and then when they try to do anything about it, he wants to heal himself
something that helps
and
him
do
move
nightmare
around,
visions.
I feel, right?
Yeah, he needs something to help him move around or some way to generate more power or both.
I mean, that's just like such a hard, like who... And where do you, like... Do you put him in Dormammu to generate him extra power so he can use his things more?
No,
do you put him in like? No. Do you put him in a bump so we can bump with Blade so you can move around the table? Like, that's no. Like, what are we doing with him? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't like, think we're moving him unless we're Eagle, doing like
play him with Cap to so like reduce his superpowers, but like that doesn't help him.
Yeah,
that
I mean,
much.
If you're like taking him in humans and putting him forward with Medusa and feeding him power for some reason,
I think like honestly, like. Original core set Red Skull helps Shadow King generate more power, has the place effect to help get him up there.
Yeah.
Is that the best? Like,
I mean, I like this guy. If this guy was Cabal affiliated, I would be interested about playing him in Cabal with one of the
best.
But he's not. I think it's worth mentioning the classic tricks and traps, like Trap House style lists that have a bunch of models that have these kind of effects that trigger when your opponent moves, right? You can combo him with models like Mysterio and Cassandra Nova in a Cabal roster. And that's
if you would
quite
just like
fun.
To have the most like theoretically squishy roster ever, yeah.
Yeah, but if you just want to do maximum nonsense when your opponent moves, Nightmare Visions is exciting because like your opponent can move into your team and Mysterio can tricks and traps and Cassandra Nova can psychic distraction and they both get to move and do some damage. And then TT, in comes the main event, Shadow King. He does Nightmare Visions. He does more damage, but he gets to move the opponent's model. And then you get to do it all again. You get to do psychic distraction again. You get to do tricks and traps again. Oh my gosh, you're living the dream.
Here's how I envision this going on, Pat. My opponent moves up. I trigger Mysterio. I can probably even trigger Cassandra Nova. And then I go to do Nightmare Visions, and I don't have 4 power.
Yep, that seems plausible.
I mean, if I don't spend any power, I can do it on turn 2, but that means I'm just not interacting.
Well, this guy's not very good at interacting,
no,
so that's
he's
fine.
He's short and slow. So yeah,
he probably needs his first round 1 just to get in a position where he can do something relevant in round 2 anyway.
Yeah. All right. Sorry, Shadow King. Pat seems to be...
Like I said, I like him. I don't think he's good. He's fragile. He's slow. And his action economy is not the best.
Well, Pat, could I sell you on Astral Plane then? An unaffiliated reactive Shadow King card during the power phase. Shadow King may pay 1 power to play this card. choose a secure objective token and place an astral inclusion token on it. Enemy characters suffer one damage when they end an activation within one of the astral inclusion, and when they interact with the objective token marked with it. During the cleanup phase, remove all astral incursion tokens.
Okay, so that was a lot of text. So
yeah,
you can use this at the start of any round, because it's in the power phase and it costs one. You're going to have the power to play it. So that's not an issue. It's very cheap. You choose one secure objective, and for the round, enemy characters take a damage if they end within one of it. So if they end their activation contesting it.
Yep.
Or if they interact with it. So if it's a pay to flip.
Yes.
So it's maybe going to do one or two damage to the opponent's team.
Maybe.
That's kind of like best case, right?
Yeah.
Worst case, doesn't they do anything. Ignore it
and you've wasted a power?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd also add that giving your opponent damage after they pay to flip is not always bad for them, because you're refunding the power they spent.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the best case scenario for this? You play it on the back gamma wave and your opponent really wants to contest with multiple models. Or it distrays them from contesting with more than one, and that maybe wastes a movement action in a subsequent round.
Best scenario is like, I'm going to win the game, Pat, unless you take this secure from me. But all of your team only has one hit point left.
And each of them will die. Yeah. Okay, here's some slightly better scenarios for it. Scenario one.
My scenario.
Your scenario is obviously good.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Your scenario gets 10 out of 10, but slightly more realistic scenarios where maybe this is better. If you're playing a central secure plus research station, oftentimes against a lot of opponents in round one, teams will just send multiple models into the middle for research station. Then you might do a little bit more damage, or it might help you to get the researcher on the first round. Maybe that's good enough for that specific crisis. Maybe it's worth playing. Shadow King also seems like he's a fine research station model. Maybe that's good. My other suggestion... it's gone out of my head as I tried to justify research station. I think it was less convincing than research station. He didn't look very convinced by that.
Gamma, you can ping one or two people,
okay. No, the other thing, TT, is of course you can move opposing models. Right, you can do it with Nightmare Visions, you can do it with your builder, and you can do it with other models in your team. So the other thing you can do is you pick a point on the table that's going to be the parking lot for the opposing team, and then you start herding them into the boogeyman. You herd them into the astral plane, and each person takes a damage. Now the problem is they only take damage when they end their activation. So actually, this doesn't work at all, except with Nightmare Visions. So it has synergy with Nightmare Visions. That's it.
All right, cool. You want to talk about Mind Wipe or Cerebro next?
Yeah, sure. I like both these cards a lot more than Astral Plane. Let's talk about Cerebro.
Okay, let's talk about Cerebro.
It's too long. Go ahead. It's my turn.
Okay, you
Uncanny
do it.
Uncanny X-Men affiliated card, active. During its activation, an Uncanny X-Men character with at least one Mystic attack and at least five Mystic defense may play this card. For the rest of the round, the character that played the card increases the range of their Mystic attacks by one to a max of five, adds one die to their Mystic attacks, and adds one die to their Mystic defense rolls. Additionally, this character's attacks don't require line of sight and ignore stealth for the rest of the round.
What do you think of Cerebro, Pat?
I think it's super cool, and it's quite good. I quite like it. So, first off, who can play this card? Right now, I think it's just Professor X and Jean Grey, right? The two X-Men with five Mystic Defense and Mystic Attacks. Magic, of course, has her magical sword, but she's only got four Mystic Defense. She's not a powerful psychic. I can't think of any other Mystic X-Men. There's probably one
Psylocke
that I've forgotten
only
about.
A four?
Yes, Psylocke, of course, has a Mystic Sword and also four. They've obviously thought about this.
I can't think of another one. I assume it's just them.
So it's Jean Grey and Professor X, both of which are a similar archetype, right? Of being fragile, long-range attackers. And this card is really good for that archetype, right? It makes you makes both of them have range 5 builders with high attack dice. Lets them sit in safe positions where they don't need line of sight and helps their defenses a little bit. Helps Professor X's defense a little bit more because he gets to use his Mystic Defense more often. I mean, best case for this card, the range increase is keeping the model safe and saving them a movement action to move forwards. Then they're getting a couple of extra attack dice and maybe being able to pick a preferential target. I think that best case is pretty good and I would play that card. I'm just worried that it won't often come up that much, right? And if you're not ticking all those boxes, like, is it enough just to give yourself 2 attack dice with this card? By which I mean 1 attack dice for 2 attack actions.
Yeah, I don't think it is. And that's kind of where I fell short on Cerebro personally. The other thing is like, okay, we talked about the models can take it. So realistically, I'm probably only going to have one of them in my team.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm taking Gene and Professor, but I don't know. I just think it feels narrow to me. Yeah. And it just honestly doesn't feel that impactful. I like the fact that it doesn't cost power. I think it's fringe. Like if you're really worried about like a stealth team or something, maybe.
Yes. And I think, look, as a counter card, it's actually quite hard to play around because it doesn't cost power, like you said, and you play it in your activation. So if I want my Miles Morales to be safe from Professor X or Jean Grey, I can't have those, that model end within range 5 of them.
Yeah, we just need to run away. Yep.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool, right? As a tech card, I think it's quite nice, actually.
Yeah, again, I think it'll have its places, but in general, I think it's fine. I think if you take it, I think it'll be like the 8th, 9th, 10th card of your tactics, and you use it occasionally for a very specific task.
Yes. But yeah, I think it's unique enough that it has a place. And when you care about multiple effects, it's good. If this turns one of those models' activations from advance and attack with 5 dice to stand still and attack twice with 6 dice because of the range buff plus the damage buff, that's great, right? And if this makes it a nightmare for your opponent to use their stealth models, that's pretty cool, right? So yeah, I like this card and I think I'm with you. I put it in my 10. Problem is, X-Men already have such a card burden, right? They've got so many good cards. Are you giving up, for example, to me, my X-Men for a turn 1 steal to play this card? Maybe in the right circumstance, but certainly they're very different effects. And it's hard to justify sometimes taking a counterpick card over a card that works so well for your game plan off the bat.
Yeah, so I think the card's fine. I just don't think it'll see a lot of play.
Yeah. I think it's good enough to see play, but I agree with you. It probably won't see a huge amount. One of those cards that will sit in a lot of people's 10, but won't make the 5 as often as they think.
Pat, you did that so well. Do you want to read Mind Wipe for us?
I do. It's another uncanny X-Men card. It's reactive. When another allied character is dazed or KO'd by an enemy attack or superpower, Professor X spends 3 power to play it. He immediately makes the attack shown above, targeting the enemy character that made the attack. The attack is called Enough. It is infinite range and ignores line of sight. It's free to use and does a massive 3 damage. But wait, there's more. The target of the attack can't be changed. You add dice to the attack equal to the amount of damage that the target did that dazed or KO'd the allied character that triggered it. And if the attack deals damage, after it's resolved, the target character gains an activated token. And if they were active, then their activation immediately ends.
I think it's pretty cool.
It's super cool. I think this is way up there in cool factor. Like, I love the story that this card tells.
Yeah, I think that's a great way. We talked about how Professor X was going to be kind of, doesn't have a great way to dump power by himself, so I don't know. I like Mind Wipe. I think it's good. I'd play it. It's a free attack. Free attack, not attack action. And I think, right, its upside is incredible.
Yeah, the threat that this is another card that's a pain for your opponent to play around, right? Because it is, it will make some of your, like, I don't know about UTT, but oftentimes I feel like the most important turns in MCP are activations where you have a very powerful character with a lot of power that needs to activate and do impactful things that round, right? And you spend a lot of time thinking like, okay, this game is close. My Black Panther just got up from daze and has 8 power. How am I going to thread all these things together so that I can have a big impact and swing the game in my favor? Do you know what I mean? I feel like those things come up a lot in MCP and they're very important. And a card like Enough does a lot to turn those already like difficult decision-making puzzles into a complete nightmare. You know, where you're like, well, my best case scenario is I start off by throwing this model into this one and that will daze this one and do a bit of damage. Then I'm going to hit them and do and finish them off. And then I'm going to run and score this objective. But with Enough on the table, as soon as I've dazed the first model, my turn could be over and the whole plan falls apart and then I lose the game.
Yep.
Very hard to play around this card other than not to beat up people or to have incredibly good defenses against it and just hope to not take any damage.
Yeah, I mean, in the last box review, I talked about how I like the design space of Nightcrawler being a lower threat model that can punch up and bother the kind of like the Malekiths or the Cosmics or the Thanoses, right? And I do like how Mindwipe is another way to like disrupt and just basically bother them, right?
Yes.
Because you can theoretically cancel their activation, and their activations are very high value, right?
Yes. And they've obviously got some amount of value out of their activation because they've dazed or KO'd one of your characters.
Sure.
But assuming it's on a powerful model and you're playing it in a way that makes them lose at least one action, right? That could be enough. And potentially they could lose a lot more than that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I really, really like this card. I think it's really cool. I think it's really threatening. And I think it's hard for your opponent to get. I just think it makes life difficult for your opponent. So I'm very happy to include this card, I think. What do you think about it?
Same. I like this card. I think this is by far the best card in the box. I think it's very good. I think it's worth shouting out, like, ignoring range and line of sight doesn't get around stealth or other things like that, but I do think it's a very good card.
Hey, TT, if you want to get around stealth, you know what you can do?
What can we do, Pat?
You can also play Cerebro in your activation. Ooh. And for the round, you can get a bonus dice on Enough and ignore stealth.
Can we ignore other stealth-like effects that are not named stealth?
No, we can't.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah, Cassandra Nova is still able to evade Cerebro, which is pretty cool.
But we like Mind Wipe. So we like Mind Wipe. We're okay in Cerebro. Astral Plane, we think, is a card. Shadow King seems extremely squishy for a 5/3. Mm-hmm. Professor X seems fine, but his leadership seems very good. Is that an accurate assessment, Pat?
Yeah, I am excited to play Professor X because of his leadership, and the rest of him I think I can just make work. Shadow King, I said, he's cool. Not exactly.
I will play Shadow King at one point with my weird Mysterio love and do some funny shenanigans like you described. And while doing those funny shenanigans, I'll lose the game, and that's totally fine and acceptable. I am excited to play Professor X, get some X-Men back in the table. I think that should be fun. I haven't played X-Men in quite a while, so.
Yeah,
I don't have many X-Men painted.
Well, we've got a whole lot of new X-Men now, so maybe paint them up instead.
Yeah, I got to get on that. That's a great point. All right, Pat, is there anything else we want to talk about here? Otherwise, I think that was a good box review.
Yeah, look, I think this is a cool box. It's great to see another leader. It's great to see some unusual characters in Shadow King. And I think the tactics cards are on that good line where they're not obvious auto-includes, but they're interesting and worthy of consideration.
I agree. So you can let us know what we got wrong and Discord. You can find that at acrossthebifrost.com/Discord. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can support us at patreon.com/acrossthebifrost. Whether you support us or not, though, we sincerely want to thank each and every one of you for listening to us ramble about Marvel Crisis Protocol. And until next time, everyone, cheers and happy gaming.